Sometimes, in order to not have to feel the pain of loss, we don't open ourselves to the fullness of the love that is our birth right inheritance of our nature. Given, you know, sometimes, and if in our mind we pick up the Buddha's teaching and goes, oh, well, he points to impermanence and death, therefore I'm not going to get too attached to things, therefore I better not love too deeply. You know, it doesn't, it's not logical if you follow it clearly, but the heart can close as a knee-jerk response. Yeah, all things change. Things can't do it for me ultimately, therefore I'm not going to completely open myself to them and fully love them, because they will disappoint in the end. They'll leave, I'll leave, or they'll disappoint in all other kinds of ways. This is not what he meant. This is where we have to take it beyond the level of just the view, just the mind that goes, oh, you see, better not be too attached. Attachment's clinging, clinging's bad, liberation's from non-clinging. I'm not going to cling. As if we could take that stance with the world. What does it mean to release clinging through love? Through fully loving what we love. Because when we love and lose, which we do, it can feel so awful. It can feel like our world's been torn apart. Something's torn out of us. The metaphor of tearing, you know, you see that in the different cultures and traditions around grief. I think one of my Jewish friends told me in the Jewish tradition you would tear your clothes a little bit after someone dies. Someone's nodding, yeah. And sometimes you see that gesture, you know, when someone hasn't been able to have their grief, they're just tearing at themselves. We want to tear the sky apart and tear the mystery and find out, where are they? Where have they gone? Where's my love? Can feel so personal because we personally love others. We love them personally. But the Buddha says, yes, and open your gaze. Open your gaze and look a little wider. So the story is told in the tradition, many of you know. It's a really heart-rendering, one of the most heart-rendering stories I know from the Pali canon, of Kisa Gotami, the young woman who comes to the Buddha distraught. And I have the image of her. I don't know if this is how it's told or it's my image of a mother who's just lost her child, whose child has died, and she has the small child in her arms, dead in her arms. And my image is that she's tearing. It's like the desperation is... help, right? She comes to the Buddha and she says, help, help, bring my child back to life. Or cure my sick child. He's dead, the child. Help. And even though everyone can plainly see that this child will not come back to life, the Buddha does not immediately go. In his gift of being the wise teacher, he doesn't say, look, the child's dead, you know, all things die, get real. No. He says, yeah, I can help you. I can help you. And so she goes, oh, right? So she opens, I can help you. Oh, he said, but what I want you to do is go to the nearby village and bring me a mustard seed, a seed that has come from a house in the village. And she says, okay, I'll do that. And he says, but you must check that the seed comes from a house in which nobody has died. And she said, okay. So she goes with her child from house to house, knocks on the door. Have you got a mustard seed? Yeah, sure. Oh, has anybody in this house died? Yes. Okay. She goes next door, and she goes next door, and she goes next door, and there is not one home where they have not experienced death at many levels, at different times. and she goes back to the Buddha. And that pilgrimage, it's like that essentially is that's her pilgrimage. She learns through the way that she can learn, not by being told, but by meeting her brothers and sisters, where what is intensely personal, and what can be worse, actually, than the loss of your child or a parent? I mean, I don't know. But it's there, isn't it, with heartbreaking. And she learns, and she comes back to the Buddha, and she says, thank you. I get it. And I think the story goes on to that she probably becomes a nun and gets fully enlightened. Doesn't mean she lives happily ever after. I think it's more a window of Dharma opens for her. And she's like, okay, what am I dedicating this life to? So how to hold that intensely personal experience of what we love, because we love personally, in this big universal context, not to take us away from our own pilgrimage, but to hold that love, that we deeply love, in a big context. Because what's our choice is, we love intensely and personally, and then that one dies or leaves or whatever it may be, and it's stark. It's a stark shift, and they're gone. The death seems so final. Death seems so absolute. Death seems like such a defining punctuation that I'm left lost, devastated, bereft. And physical death looks so final, doesn't it? Those of you who know and have sat with people either from dying to dead or dead people or other beings, animals, I was just reflecting on this coming up yesterday on the train, and it doesn't happen very much in England. I saw it much more when I travelled in other countries. I don't know why, if it's what farming practice, but as the railway was passing the farmer's field, there was a dead sheep, upside down, as can happen when the rigor mortis is there. So it must be at that particular point, on her or his back, with the legs up stiff. It's very stark. And there's all these sheep in the field next to it doing their sheepy, expressing their essential sheep nature, and looking like sheep. And there's this one that's dead, and it looks so different. I mean, it's still fluffy, but it's so stark, isn't it? It's such a stark contrast that our mind, which can't wrap around it, it's got, well, the thing's just, you know, I had it. I had my love, I had my mum, and now she's gone. And of course, to some extent, that's true. But the mind, the conceiving mind, does it like day and night, like two sides of a coin. You're here and then you're not here. The Buddha asks us actually to examine, even in the first place, the you're here bit. The one that I love, my parent, my cat. The unawake mind assumes that thing is a thing. That creature, that being, that event has some kind of ontological status, has some kind of existence that is there, and then it's not there. Now, this is the bit where we have to come to the contemplative part, because the mind really finds this hard to wrap itself around. Well, it's there, she was there, and she's not there. This year, I have had feels like quite a lot of close encounters with death and dying. And my dear own mother died in August, and I had sat with my father's body after he died 12 or 13 years ago, because that's, you know, that's what you can do, and that's what happens in lots of cultures, and certainly I'm from an Irish family, and but also because it's recommended in the Buddhist teachings. And I kind of like sit, hang out, just contemplate this threshold. I sat with my dad, and it was actually a beautiful experience some years ago. It's shocking. He's not dad, but he's not dad. He's definitely not my dad anymore, but he's not somebody else's dad, apart from my brothers. You know, he's still sort of dad. You know, so you're trying to, is he here, is he not here? And the mind can only do binary in that regard, right? He's here or he's not here. No, practice mindfulness of body breathing. Practice cultivating the citta, and our sensibility can open to the Buddha's understanding of emptiness, that maybe he wasn't here in the first place in the way I thought he was. And maybe he's not here in... And maybe the way he's not here is not here in the way I thought he isn't. However that sentence goes. Right? Maybe I don't know. Maybe I don't know. And then this year when my mum died, I, you know, sounds strange, doesn't it? You know, to repeat a good experience, go and sit with my mum. Repeat a profound experience. And I was with her when she died, and that had its own whole many things around it, which I may or may not sure. I'm not sure if that fits here. But my point was, when I didn't need to go see her in the funeral home, because I had seen her. I'd been with her for several hours after she died, and and there was that contrast. Even though there's also that just that doorway, like that creaky door earlier. It's like poof, right? From that moment between life and death. And then my little niece. Big niece wanted to go see Mum, so I went with her a couple of weeks later, and I got a real shock. You know, I don't know if you want the details, but she was laid out in the little chapel, but she was blue and red and bruised, and her mouth was in a really strange shape. They hadn't done the job of making it look pretty, making her look pretty, right? In fact, I'd ask, don't put makeup on her, because somebody else told me they went to see their mum. She had so much foundation on her face and lipstick, and she never wore any makeup, and they got another kind of shock. But so I said, don't put makeup on mum. But also what had happened, the chemicals that they'd put in had reacted with the medications she'd last been on. But anyway, it wasn't that beautiful, profound experience I'd had with my dad's body. It's not pretty. It looks like such a big contrast. That didn't look like my mom at that point. And the point I'm making is to come back to that inquiry that the Buddha points us to, of what is it that we're imputing is there in the first place that we think then is gone? What is it that we're saying, that's mum, I know who she is, she's this, and then when she's gone, she's gone. And that's why death becomes so final, that's why death looks like such the most major punctuation for our life on earth, because it looks so starkly different. So let's explore while we're alive that inquiry into emptiness. Because if I love my mom, and I did, and it got better over the years, how does the love fit into that? In my ordinary mind, you know, the other day, actually it was on the train yesterday as well, I rang my brother who still lives in the house, and it's the phone number I've rung since I was... God knows how long, and I know the shape of the phone number, and except the 0208 bit changed somewhere along the line, but that those other digits are all the same. And I could see whatever that is that I hope for when I call to my mum's house, it's like, it's not there. It's my brother, I like him. I do like my brother, but he's not my mum. And the thought came to me, oh, there's no thing where the light used to be. There's no thing where the light used to be. What I loved. What is it we love when we say we love? What is it we love when we say we love? We could point to characteristics or qualities. And if we, again, settle the mind and steady deep enough, what is it that we love? And when we love someone deeply, check it out. Check it out. When I was sitting in front of Wendy's teacher, when I said, oh my goodness, there's a lot of love here that's arising when I'm in your location. So that must mean I love you. Right? It does. I did love him. But the untrained mind will then immediately go, oh, it's all about you. And then when you're gone, I have no love. Do you see the... It becomes about the other, because in their presence, I love. In the presence of my cat, I love. So our practice, our work, it's not that it's not about them. This is the mystery. But you know how we make it all about them? You know when you fall in love and you make it all about them? They really are the divine goddess from beyond. Right? The sky lights up. I just want to be with you. And everything else is a little bit of a encumbrance until it does, however long that bit lasts. If you're lasts a little while, maybe, if you're lucky. Right? It becomes about you. My mind, yet not free, can only see that it's about my teacher. It's about my great love. It's about my mom. And from practice, then, what is it we can learn to tolerate? Can we learn to tolerate that love? That we don't have to narrow the field and make it just about the other. Yes, we can bow. Yes, I love that when I'm with you, something wakes up in me. Yes, I love that when I'm with you, I learn more about life. But what would it mean then to tolerate that love? Because it's arising here. We think it's over there. You're the source. No, he's not the source. Neither are you the source. It's everywhere. Right. Can I sense into my body? Can I sense into the chitta, the heart mind? Sense what's arising when I'm sitting in front of him, as the metaphor I gave earlier, or the story I gave earlier. And let that love deepen right here. So that it frees him up from making it just about him. And it becomes available and spills out.